Welcome to the Morning Ritual Podcast, meditations and conversations to set the tone for your day. Today's guest is very near and dear to my heart. She's been a teacher and mentor of mine for many years. I did the maths and we're almost at 10 years. She's an author, a teacher, and she runs one of New York City's leading yoga therapy school called Prema Yoga Institute. And I got to go through that program myself, and it changed my teaching and my life. And so Dana is somebody that's obviously had a massive influence to me. Warm welcome to Dana Slamp. Dana, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Lily. It's great to be back together again. Great to see your face and excited to see the morning ritual growing and expanding. And hello, so many folks listening that I have yet to meet and study with you and meditate with you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I could literally just read your About Me page from your website and give our listeners an insight into your story and who you are, but it's going to be much more interesting coming out of your mouth. So could you give our listeners just a little preview, overview of who you are, your sort of story, your journey to get to where you are now, which is this really empowered, amazing woman. So give us a sneak peek into that journey.
Thank you. It has been a long one. And where to begin and where to end? I'll start with the ending. Currently, I'm the founder of Prema Yoga Institute, and we've been running trainings now for 13, 14 years. And we now run them online. We're an accredited yoga therapy school with IOIT, and we're also a Yoga Alliance Advanced School in Yoga. But what brought me to yoga therapy, as is often happens, was my own path with therapy, both traditional therapy, you know, mental health counseling, which we do a lot here in New York, but also the somatic psychic work of yoga, the asanas, the movement, and the meditation. So there's two simple paths we could take. One is top down, which is what you're doing on the morning ritual, which is meditating and shifting your thoughts. So it shifts your focus and hopefully become more content or happy or present. And you can also take bottom-up therapies too in yoga therapy, where it's body to mind. And that's what I did the most. When I first found yoga, I was in a pretty competitive grad school for classical acting called ACT in San Francisco. And we would do some yoga, and we'd do something they called imaginal movement, which I later found out was yoga nidra. And all I knew was that I felt so good in my body when I practiced yoga, and I felt great in my mind when I practiced the yoga nidra. And I would go in and out of that, but mostly I'd become a gym rat. There was a lot of pressure. I did move to New York to act. I got as far as, say, an understudy on Broadway, which is not really easy to do. I performed in 16 Shakespearean productions, I believe, one with the Shakespeare Theater in Washington, D.C., and I got to work with Arthur Miller 8 months before he died. And yet it was really a vow of low revenue, let's just say, in that job, and the pressures of rejection, how many times you have to audition before you find out if you make a role is a lot. And it just goes on and on. And at the same time, you have to do another job. I was a legal writer. I wrote some plays, but that also didn't pay, you know, so I'd be bartending or a singing bartender, you know, I got fatigued with the lifestyle. And then I had this terrible breakup. I had a disengagement. And when that happened, it was really just an absolute shift in the road. Luckily, by that time, I had a consistent yoga practice. I did not yet have a consistent meditation practice. So to be completely transparent to everyone listening, I a practitioner. You know, I'm still working on a more consistent meditation practice. And usually when you meet someone in our field, what you know is not so much what you can know is not so much that they're experts, but they real but that they really need yoga or they really need meditation. And in those years, I really needed it. I used hot yoga to quit smoking. I mean, this is way back in the day. I left any kind of bartending just to kind of shift my hours and my company, you know, the people I kept company with, and was working more in a legal office and so forth and so on. So when this great loss happened, I was already teaching yoga. And I realized that what my spirit really needed was to walk into that room and to care for someone else, to be in mindful surroundings, and to, at least at the time I knew, at least to pause the obsession of preparing for free, to walk into rooms, to really care if a room of strangers liked my work enough. You know, it just didn't feel organic to me anymore. So that set me down the yoga path. And I was teaching a lot of what we sometimes call advanced yoga, but I have to put big bunny marks around that, because just because it looks fancy doesn't necessarily mean it's advanced. But I was doing advanced vinyasa, teaching a lot of that, and getting burnt out. And I was actually leading loving kindness meditation at a beautiful studio in New York City. And I would notice something happen in my body when I led loving kindness meditation. And that would be that I felt pains in my heart. And I didn't know what it meant, right? But I knew that I'd come from a place of what felt like grief and tragedy. And I had transferred all that energy, yes, from negative to positive, but I had transitioned into service without really doing the deep work of tending to and caring for myself. So when I went into yoga therapy training, I was really just doing it for myself. One of our faculty, Dr. Chris Walling, he also jokes that all research is me search. And I was doing a lot of me searching, you know, in those days. And it wasn't until I took time and actually through about four or five transformative sadhanas. So sadhanas are, this is a Sanskrit word and it can mean a number of things. In this case, I mean, it's a spiritual discipline that you do every day, usually in the morning. And my sadhana was meditation. And it was through each of the sadhanas were very disciplined every day for 40 days, every day for 40 days. I believe one of them was in the morning and at night. And during that time, I felt a shift where I had better boundaries around my energy. And once I was that deeply fed, then I could step forth and hold spaces where others could do the same. And that brings me to this moment where I feel I'm expanding again outside of yoga therapy, above and beyond. With the Institute always being home base, because in my culture, there's no other place where we look at mind, body, and spirit simultaneously. There's no other place like yoga therapy right now. That's really where my heart is in that union of mind, body, and spirit. One of my favorite translations of Sutra 1.2, which I'll provide the Sanskrit, and apologies that my pronunciation is not as good as an indigenous speaker, but the sutra goes, yogash chitta vritti narodaha. And sometimes this is translated as, yoga is the cessation of the attachment to the fluctuations of the mind. So this can happen in meditation as well as in the postural yoga. And Lily, I'm guessing you've talked about this, or some of your guests have before. One of my favorite translations of that sutra is, Yoga is the union of that which has never been separate. Yoga is the union of that which has never been separate. So we're at a little paradigmic disadvantage in the West that we actually think, because of Cartesian thought, that the mind is separate from the body, when in fact true changes in the mind can happen in the body and vice versa.
Yeah. I remember being in, you might remember the exact training, but listen, this yoga therapy training was like 850 hours long, and I don't know which module it was in, but Dana looked at us and said, "Okay, everyone, point to your mind." And everyone points to their head. No, point to your mind. And people point to their heart. No, point to your mind. And then Dana just proceeds to put her hands all over her body. Your mind is in your body, are one. And it was like, of course, but everyone pointed to their head first. And I learned recently, like, we have, of course, neurons running from the brain to the body. We have neurons running from the body to the brain. And 85% of the neurons run from the body to the brain. And only 15 run from the brain to the body. So we think the mind is in control, running the show, calling the shots, and our body is really the one that is in charge. So the more that we can drop down into the body to work with what we believe is the mind, even though they are already connected, that is what I'm most excited about with the work as a yoga therapist, is using embodiment to work with the mind. And this could go into another direction, but I want to refocus to your experience with meditation. And recently, in a private one-on-one chat that we had, you told me a really personal story about an experience that you've had recently, an experience that you've described as meeting the Divine Mother. And I was wondering if you'd be willing to share that story with our listeners and then open up about how that's changed things for you.
Absolutely. And I'm still finding the words to describe it. When you have a moment with the divine, it really moves beyond words. So I welcome the opportunity. Now, these experiences with the divine, they can happen anywhere. They can happen in a place we've set aside for hallowed experiences, like a church or a mosque or a grotto or a temple. It can happen in nature. It happens all the time in nature. And this particular experience happened for me in acupuncture. And I was in the middle of a moment where I was taking the reins on making a life dream come true. And I had been waiting a long, long time for this dream to come true. And I just thought, I'm just going to do it. And I was using the acupuncture for physical reasons, but also to focus my mind. And acupuncture, at least great acupuncturists, I feel, can really take you to a meditative state. And I was listening to a chant as well on my earphones and chanting as it went along. So I was focusing my mind, focusing on my intention, and I didn't necessarily expect anything miraculous to happen. Historically, I do come from a religious family, and so I'm used to spending time in prayer or in meditation or singing, a lot of times in community. My parents were conservative Christians. My grandfather was a preacher. My father was a preacher. So this is all, you know, this connection with the divine isn't necessarily new to me. It's only more broad than what we think of as a religious tradition. And I think that's in keeping with just how expansive the divine can be. And some might call the divine God, and some might call the divine the truth. and may even describe themselves as atheists or agnostics. So this is a broad, universal net I'm casting with this word, the divine. But I realized in this moment just how deeply the lack of female representation and female relationships in my experience of divinity had affected me. And what happened there as I was listening to the chant in a meditative state, lying comfortably alone in a dim room in the acupuncturist office, saying my prayers or saying my wishes, was that I felt the presence of the divine in a way that I can only describe as the divine mother. And it was a presence that was with me. And keep in mind, I was so dearly attached to this dream. And the feeling came that I was heard, but more importantly, and I wasn't alone, but more importantly, I was seen. And I realized that from a very young age, possibly from my birth, I did not feel seen, or I had not felt seen by the feminine side of the divine, by the divine mother. I had never been spiritually mothered. And this has informed all my major decisions. It's made me in the past a bad picker, what we call in dating, somebody who picks someone who can't really love them back. It's oriented me towards folks who, for whatever reason, couldn't really see me and put me into a repetition compulsion of fighting to be seen by folks who cannot see me instead of recognizing the people who do love me and do truly see me. And there was a sort of hurriedness to it, although this moment came later in life. There was a hurriedness, rather a fear or a panic in my relationships of needing to be present. And, you know, it's pretty easy pop psychology to say, oh, the person who becomes an actor is looking to be seen, you know, but it's also an art form. And, you know, it's a little bit more nuanced than that. But that was part of it, too. That was part of it, too, was just really desiring to be seen, even if I was being seen in another character, and understanding that for whatever reason, without assigning any blame, the pattern in my life was that I was either fighting to be seen, or there were moments in friendships, teacher relationships and relationships, romantic relationships, where I did feel seen. But the pattern remained that there was sort of an elusive nature to a slipping away of that feeling of being seen, and that I would have to work for it or I would have to fight for it. And the feeling and the presence that washed over me in that acupuncturist office while I was in meditation was something entirely different. It was like a soft golden hook in my heart that has always been there, much like how is described in yoga, and to be fair, all the mystical versions of our religions and metaphysical thought processes are about the divinity being within us. And there was a feeling of that divine mother also being in me. What she saw in me was my divine mothership, you know, the part of her that was in me. But there was also a feeling simultaneously that there was not a guarantee that my deep wish would be fulfilled. And in fact, within a matter of 3 months, the doors to that wish being fulfilled all closed permanently. And this rarely happens in life. This is, you know, not usually what I teach. You know, it's not usually the way that works, like that life works. You know, we usually say, you know, that old axiom that when God closes a door, he opens a window. And this experience of grief, this loss of my dream never happening, put me in a new place. And bear with me, because, you know, if you're prone to relentless optimism, you might want to turn the dial. But in fact, those of us who have experienced grief know this dark night of the soul, that there is a moment in the human life, if not more, where you just don't feel like you feel lost. But this time, I was able to experience this grief with the memory, with the cellular memory that I was not alone and I was seen by the Divine Mother. And that really changes absolutely everything. Absolutely everything. And we're coming on almost 2 years since this happened. I mean, it might have been the meditation anyway. It was probably about 2 years ago, and then a little under that for the whole grief process to begin. And since I had nothing to lose, I just, you know, leaned into it. And honestly, I'm just really delighted and surprised at what's on the other side. It's been a deep exploration. Where should I begin, Lily? What do you want to hear first?
Well, I'm just like reflecting on a couple things that you said. One of them being, what I'm hearing is that the presence of the Divine Mother, the support of the Divine Mother, the experience of being seen is totally unconditional. And that's like,
oh yes,
a difference from what you've experienced in the past.
Mm-hmm. It's natural, and the naturalist is unconditional, and the unconditionality is natural. They're simultaneously happening. It's simply what I am. What I am is an individual who may have some dreams realized and some dreams not realized, and I am seen. So when I don't receive the answer to my prayers or meditations the way that I wanted to receive them, I can always know that they're heard, that I was heard, and it can shift me into a more non-transactional relationship with the divine, where I am less fear motivated, where I'm not praying or meditating or setting my intentions because I'm afraid of the worst thing happening. But instead, I am casting forth my needs to the divine with the understanding that there's a larger divine plan in mind.
So non-transactional relationship to the divine. Can you give us a really clear, obvious example, not necessarily that you've had, but maybe just a general example of what a transactional relationship with the divine would look like?
Sure. I'll tell you about what a transactional relationship with the divine is, and then I'll tell you why my original idea of a non-transactional relationship with the divine didn't really cut mustard when I went into it more deeply. So a transactional relationship with the divine would be, if I'm good, then good things happen to me. This is a transaction. I will be a good girl, good person, a good boy, and therefore good things will happen to me. This can turn into a kind of spiritual bypassing, because when we see, and it could be subconscious, and I don't mean to judge, but here's the pitfall of this kind of thinking. When we see bad things happen to other people, if we really think that bad things are just a result of their goodness or badness, then we're not reaching out to them with compassion as a human who's having a human experience, you know? We could worst case scenario, blame it on them. And this kind of black and white thinking, I believe in Western psychotherapy, is called splitting, where we start to see people as all good and all bad. And that's when we get into really intense groups, and there's fighting. Quite literally, fights and wars break out because of this concept that one group of people can be all good or all bad. It can happen in the grief process too, and all compassion to all listeners who have done this. You know, prayed that if God will do this, then we'll do that. You know, if God will save my cat from dying, then I will quit smoking. This is actually a friend of mine did this. And actually, she kept that because her cat didn't die, lived to the ripe age of 18, 19, and she stayed. No. Her deal was she wouldn't buy cigarettes. So once a month, she'd eat a cigarette and borrow one from someone else. Yes, so those are transactional relationships with the divine. Right. It's not really a high relationship of devotion and love, really, to right. But then the next thing I said, though, Lily, do you remember, was here's why a non-transactional relationship with the divine doesn't really work. Yes, so now I'm getting into an area where I don't quite have words yet. But hear me out. If there is divinity, isn't it good? And if there is divinity, isn't it the source of all goodness, right? And all connectivity? And isn't everything we receive really coming from the divine Mother Earth? Right? Isn't every meal I eat from another animal or another plant? Don't I get this energy from somewhere else? So if I'm in an area where there is no food, no amount of money is going to bring me food. Every good and perfect thing comes from God, a certain scripture says, right? In another discipline outside of yoga. So we do receive from spirit, I feel. And I've come around. For a while, I wasn't really asking for anything. And I really doubted my manifestation powers and the whole manifestation theory. And for good reason. You know, during COVID, there were some really good inquiries out there in the social media sphere about manifestation theory, and also around prosperity theology, that this also can be spiritual bypassing. We can so easily look at someone who is in a very, very difficult situation and think that it is only up to them to pull themselves up by their bootstraps in like a Horatio Alger novel, which, by the way, were written over 90 years ago. Circumstances have changed and circumstances affect individuals. So sometimes this thinking can prevent our empathy and our compassion, which is the best way for our divinity to move, the divinity within us, right? So we do need to ask. And the way that we ask, I feel, is very critical. And this does appear in a lot of manifestation thinking. It's claiming what is rightfully ours within the divine plan. Within the divine plan, it must have humility within it. These prayers and meditations, these hopes and dreams, they will not happen from our own sheer force of will. We have but one piece of the divine in a massive, immense web. And we should ask for what we need. We should ask for what we want. Everything is happening for our highest good and happiness. And everything we should do should be for the highest good and happiness. The web isn't a web that only moves towards us. we need to move towards it as well. And one of the ways we do that is through meditation and prayer, but it is not a gimme relationship. It is claiming that which is ours in the divine plan. It is living in a place of empathy and abundance. It is practicing giving, but giving not just so you can get something back, but giving for giving's sake, giving out of devotion, right? Now, if you think, I'm going to toggle back to the yoga traditions and talk a little bit about the bhakti yoga tradition. So a lot of us think of bhakti as that true devotion. Bhakti is the chanting and the singing. The Hare Krishna chanters are practicing a form of bhakti. But bhakti and devotion also has another side to it, and that is service. So when we are giving folks, we bring back that giving to us. And it is not an if you scratch my back, oh, whoever, Holy Mother, Jehovah, Ganesha, whoever, divine spirit, even scientific research. If I devote my life to this scientific research, it will reward me. It's beyond cause and effect. And that's what makes it divine. It follows the laws of cause and effect, also known as karma, but it has a larger plan outside of us. And it took a lot of self-inquiry and a lot of help and a lot of suffering, some of which was in my body during this last 2 years. I mean, not for nothing. I got this foot injury and I was hobbling around to my classes for at least 9 months out of a year. It took a lot of inquiry before I did more than just accept that the loss of my dream was a failure. Instead, now I understand genuinely that it wasn't meant to be, and it wasn't in the divine plan. And I understand it now so much more clearly, and it brings me a deep peace of mind. But all of this began not because necessarily my dream didn't come true, but because I finally had a feeling of being seen by the feminine divine, of being spiritually mothered.
Silly question, but just want to clarify. Every single living being has divinity in them.
Yes. Yes, yes, absolutely. And I love how you say that, every single living being, not just our species. Because our species is in a really, really, really difficult time right now. We're not so friendly to the other species either. And the Earth is in a really tricky position. Now is the time to wake up to the divinity in others, to look back at the great teachers, to do our work, to do even this work, you know, that the listeners are doing, of meditating more. This is so important, and it's completely fine to begin with yourself and your family. Absolutely. To know, however, that this part of the divine that you're tending to in yourself is also in other living beings, is to expand it past you and to start to connect into this divine web, this divine plan.
Yeah, and whenever I am tapping into source, divinity, whatever we want to call it, I get an opportunity to move beyond my own ego and have a lot less suffering. But I'm still figuring out the ways to tap in and also find that more divine feminine within myself, which goes against a lot of the things that I was taught growing up. So I actually have to go to a meditation class. So I have to bring this conversation to a close, but I think we need a part two. I think sure, we need a part two. So in the near future, I think we need to get a part two and we can dive into the sort of divine feminine within our own being. Also want to learn more about how this experience has shifted the way that you operate in the world. And for our listeners, we will give you an opportunity to send in some questions that you might have for Dana, or send in some just maybe ideas like, oh, I would love to have you delve more into this topic. So I'll share this episode, and then listeners, please write in. I'll leave our email in the show notes. I'll leave Dana's info in the show notes. Connect with us, and we're going to do a part two and dive deeper. How does that sound?
Lovely. Yes. And I would love for you to answer some of these questions too, Lily, because I'm so curious about how you tap in as well. And I think that'll be great for the listeners too, so they have a little buffet. And maybe too, if the listeners feel compelled to send in how they connect to the divine, I'd love to hear what folks are doing. Maybe it's their morning walk with their dog, or it's a meditation class with you, or making their dinner, however they connect to the web of things. I'd love to hear those stories too.
Yeah, awesome. And then just to close, where can we find you, Dana?
Oh, sure. So the Yoga Therapy Institute is called Prema Yoga Institute, PREMA Yoga Institute, all one word, .com. And then my personal page is danaslamp.com if you're ever in New York and want to roll through and take a class. I also have some short classes online. And if you just wanted to pop in, you know, Lily did the whole enchilada. She did 850 hours, but we love when folks just pop in for one training. Like, we have a small sound yoga training. We have an essentials therapeutics training, which is great for yoga teachers everywhere, and yoga practitioners can fit into that. Healthcare practitioners, there's a yoga and healthcare training. And I'm also on Instagram if you want to follow me. I'm just at Dana Slamp. And that's my same name at Substack, where I'll be sharing articles, a few of which are on this topic that we're discussing today. So come find me, and I look forward to hearing you. If you're from Morning Ritual, we'll even give you a little discount if we need to do something.
And then I think we'll be sharing this episode only a couple months before the Ayurveda training, which is so interesting. So the world of Ayurveda, we've touched on it a bit on this podcast, but yes, I will include all that information in the show notes below, and we'll close our episode the way that we always do, with a full breath in and a cleansing, clearing breath out. And have a lovely day.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.